Hello, welcome to Echoes of Impact with Noura. This is your host, Noura Al-Masri. I can't wait for today's episode because I'm going to talk to two very special guests. You're going to hear from them. We're going to start with a topic that most of you are afraid of. You don't want to hear about it, but it affects everything in your life. It affects every day, like all aspects, your home, your wealth, everything. And this is the only certain thing, you know, death and what? Yes, taxes. Taxes can be fun if you work with the right advisor. If you being a proactive and know the bare minimum and work with an advisor alongside, then the tax season is not going to be very stressful. Then the tax season is not going to be full of surprises. That's why at Echoes of Impact, we try to talk about tax tips, whether if it's like the segment that I had with you during tax season, save taxes with Noura, whether it's with the guests. I have a very special guest today. I have Joe Reyes from tax and accounting firm that he established. I'm not going to talk about it a lot. I'm going to have him talk about it. Welcome, Joe, to Echoes of Impact. Thank you for joining me today. I'm very excited to have our conversation.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right, sure. So tell us a little bit about you. I usually love to have the guests talk about themselves because I feel like you can introduce yourself better to the audience. What would you like the audience to know more about you?
Oh, thank you. Sure. Yeah. So Joe Reyes, I'm originally from New York City, went to Pace University, and then moved to the Philadelphia region and got a master's degree in finance from Drexel University. And I have like a life insurance license, a Series 65 license. I had all kinds of licenses, and over the years, I just dropped some of them, but heavy into education. I do have a degree in theology, so I do specialize in death and taxes, since you brought it up, and those are the two sure things in life. I started my accounting firm in 2011. I left corporate America back then and started just doing tax returns and some bookkeeping, and you know, 15 years later, almost, we morphed into having clients all over the country, doing a lot of sophisticated stuff. We have clients that are household names, practically. Won't mention them, but it's interesting how a small company like ours can have such an impact. And that's who we are. I'm married. I have a 21-year-old boy still living with me, and he's actually working for me now. So we are keeping the money in the family, so to speak. So that's fun.
That's great that you were able to keep your son working with you. Like my two kids, I have a daughter, my daughter and a son. None of them wants to work with
me. Yeah, that's usually how it turns out, unless you're making massive amounts of money.
Yeah, like they want to try their own things. Hopefully, towards, you know, a few years later, I can pull them, at least one of them, to work with me. So.
Right.
Hopefully
nice.
They can believe that taxes are fun. So awesome. So you've seen like kind of virtual work and real work, an office work, because like you said, you started in 2011. Virtual was not a thing that as much as right. Now. Like, how do you see this change? Like, which one do you prefer? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, for an old guy, I love technology. You know, I as soon as new technology comes out, I'm all over it. You know, I want to know this. I want to learn it. I want to see where it's going. And of course, during the pandemic, you know, everything went virtual. And I love not having paper all over the place. I still have paper, but not as much. And, you know, it's just I can talk to people around the world. I have people in the Philippines that work with me, and I assign work to them. I can call them right now and talk to them face to face. So just from a cultural perspective, I find that to be very fascinating, you know, and learning other cultures. I have people in India that I can talk to face to face anytime I want. So I'm really big into technology, and now I'm totally excited with AI. I mean, I cannot believe what we're seeing, you know. So we're implementing AI a lot right now. So Yeah, technology is very cool. I don't want paper. I hate paper.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially. I mean, I have a cabinet with paper, like just from personal stuff, not even work stuff. But I'm like, I have to go through all these paper and shred what I don't need anymore because like it's been more than 20 years worth of paper. Yeah, but I'm like you, like in work and the workspace, like I don't have much paper, you know, which is nice. Very nice. Otherwise, as accountants, like we'll have like tons of papers around. So what made you want to start your own business, leaving corporate, the safety of the corporate world and being your own business owner? And you've been going so well, like for all these years. So you've been doing very, very well, I guess. So
yeah, but that's actually a very excellent question. So I am 67 years old right now. So I started this business when I was in my 50s, and at that time I was working in corporate America, and I worked for a consulting firm. I've had many different types of jobs, but the last job that I had was as a consultant. You know, there was a Fortune 500 company that was outsourcing its accounting department to the Philippines, and they needed accountants to come in and help them move everything out from Princeton, New Jersey, over to the Philippines. And 2008 hit, and the financial crisis of 2008 hit, and I was working with a bunch of other people who were around my age, and we were all consultants. And they were losing their jobs, and they were in their mid-50s to late-50s, and they had no idea what they were going to do, because as you age, you know, you got a lot of young people nipping at your heels, you know, they want to work, you know, and whose job are they going to take, right? So so I was looking at that. I was thinking to myself, you know, I need a plan B. Fortunately, I didn't suffer from the financial crisis. The company liked my work. They kept me on board for 3 years after that, and then February and March of 2011, my boss told me, hey, your gig is up. You know, they no longer need you after a few years. I say, okay, fine. But I had already put my plan B into play. And I got a website. I registered a small LLC. And I said, you know, if I lose my job, I have something to fall back on. That's exactly, I didn't lose the job because they told me, we'll get you another gig. But I told them, you go ahead and do that. By then, I already had plenty of clients because I was working from my home. And I never went back, you know. And the interesting thing is, my take on it is, if you have a job, you have one boss. All it takes is one person.
Absolutely.
To put you into, to make your life miserable, right? Fire you. But if you have a business with 150 clients, you have 150 bosses, you lose one, you're not out of business. You'll survive. So it's safer to have a business than it is to have a job. And that was my take on it. So I went full in, and I gave this business everything I had, blood, sweat, and tears. So
awesome. That's great to hear. Because a lot of people, they say the opposite. No, it's very risky to have a business, because what if you cannot make money? What if you cannot pay your bill? But you're saying the total opposite. Like, it's very risky to be an employee rather than being a business owner. And I do agree with you on that, definitely. But I guess like a lot of people think they don't really go all in. You said you went all in into your business. you really.
I went all in. Yeah, my wife almost killed me. But it had to be done, you know, especially as you get older. You know, if you're younger, you can have a job, you'll recover, right? I mean, you get another job, you'll recover. But once you have a mortgage and kids and all kinds of responsibilities, you're pretty much locked in. You lose your job, you've got trouble, you know. And plus, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur since I was a child, you know. And so I started a few different types of part-time businesses, but I always had a job. And then after 2008, I said, that's it. I got to start doing something else, you know.
Nice. What do you love most about being your own boss? What actually you said, like you have that all the clients are the bosses for the business owner. But what do you like about it, like most, other than like you said, like you have more security than having a job? What do you like?
Well, it's that, right? I mean, having a business, it is risky, first of all, but having an accounting business is not risky at all, because it's a huge demand for accountants. But if I was to develop a business selling widgets that nobody wants, then that's a risky business. But what I love the most is is how I can control my time and I can build something from scratch, right? I built it, right? Nobody's coming to rescue me if I don't get this thing done right, you know? So the satisfaction, however, having a business is both terrifying and exciting at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs it's a resounding agreement all over the place. Like, yeah, I wake up every morning, you know, terrified of what's today going to look like, and excited because anything good can happen. And very often what happens with a lot of people, especially startups, is you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you could barely sleep.
Yeah.
Then you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with sweating out of panic attacks. You know, what's tomorrow going to look like? Is the money going to come in?
Uh-huh.
You know, and so building a business is not for the faint of heart. You got to have a little thing in you that says, I'm going to push through this, you know? So the exciting part that I love the most is building, and I'm seeing I have a team of about 10 people right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting to see that I went from nothing to a team of 10 people, you know? So, but you always have concerns. You always have issues with employees and clients sometimes. So, you gotta develop a little bit of a thick skin and not panic every time something goes south. There's a saying that says everybody sooner or later has a bad day.
Absolutely.
So,
you know,
so
nice.
So that, yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that. We'll be right with you, back with you after the break. But guys, stay with us. We're gonna talk to Joe again, like after the break, with more exciting talks. And also we're gonna touch base on taxes as well. So we did not forget, but you know, we wanted to give you the story. So if you are thinking of to start a business, well, you see an example, like Joe has been so many years in a successful business. So I'll see you after the break. This is Echoes of Impact with Noura. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is your host, Noura Al-Masri, and this is Echoes of Impact with Noura. I was talking to my friend Joe before the break, and we're talking about how he built his business. Joe, welcome back. Well, I have like two more questions about your business before we move on to talk about taxes and technical stuff. How long did it take you to start hiring people and, you know, to build the 10 teams member versus being like working on your own and your company? Because what most of people like start alone and stay a long time being alone, like their business.
Yeah, that's a good question. I decided early on I was not going to work by myself, simply because the choice is, if you work by yourself and you get sick, you get hurt, you can't work, you're out of business, or hire somebody and have a team. And this way, if something happens to me, the business will continue on. And I have a family, so I want the business to continue on. So pretty much right away, I started hiring and started working with people.
That's awesome. And that's really courageous, because a lot of people don't really do that. Like, I know a lot of accountant or other business owners, they don't do that. They just stay like alone. Like, I can't afford a team member yet. Like, not yet. And that, when it never comes. So, yeah.
Yep.
Great. So what type of services do you offer at your company?
Well, we're your typical, you know, small accounting firm. We do accounting, bookkeeping, tax preparation, advisory. We work with for-profit businesses. We have some nonprofits. We work with some individuals. You know, the majority of our work is with the business world. You know, but, you know, we will work with high net worth individuals. One of the things that high net worth individuals, especially somebody who has a job and they don't have a business, they're paying 35, 40, 50% in taxes. And every tax season, they're like, It's frustrating to see them give up, half their money. But we have ways of tamping down high income from jobs, tamping down their tax bills. There is hope. You just got to know where to look. You got to know what to do. So it's continuous education. So that's what we do. But the biggest thing that we like to promote is planning. You know, if you don't plan for taxes, it's going to control you, and you're going to be miserable every April 15th.
Absolutely. So when I say planning, a lot of people have difficulty understanding what's planning. The answer would be, oh, okay, I have all my documents together. Oh, I have everything in my bank account. They wouldn't even have bookkeeping sometimes. So how would you explain planning for tax season or tax planning for people?
Yeah, so we when I'm working with a client, I'm planning. I ask a lot of questions, right? I clients think they know something about taxes, but they know nothing about taxes. Yeah. So I try to impress upon them, let's talk throughout the year. I'm going to ask you a lot of questions, and people are shocked when I start asking questions like, how old are you? Are you married? Do you have kids? How many kids do you have? What do they do? Do they work for you? Do you have a will? Do you have a trust? I start getting into personal questions, because I take a 360 degree view of a person's life, because the business and the personal, they're intertwined. Because the money that comes out of a business is going to go into your personal bank account so that you can have your lifestyle. So once that money leaves the business, it goes into your personal life. What you do with that money may have a tax impact. There may be opportunities that we can see that somebody else may not know about, even other accountants. And we're like, tell me everything about yourself. I want to know everything about, are your parents alive? Where do they live? Do they work for your business? Have you ever considered that? Do you have an infant that, not an infant, but a young child that you can put to work in your business? Have you ever considered that? And, we just throw around a lot of ideas and kick it around and try to find opportunities to chip away at the tax bill. One tax idea may not be big, but if I load it up with 10 tax ideas, now yeah. We're talking real money, So that's my position. I want to know about your cash flow. What are your projections? How's the business looking? How's the industry looking? The location you are, what's it looking like? Do you have enough money to buy a property that you can put your office into it and not have to pay rent, stuff like that. So it's a lot of questions. And sometimes it's intrusive, but I explained that, don't take it personal, but I'm here to watch your back. Half the battle is making the money. The other half is keeping the money. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And do you find a lot of resistance answering all these questions?
You know, what's interesting about being a tax guy, a tax lady, people will tell us things that they won't tell anybody else.
Yeah.
It's like, and people will send me their personal tax returns and they just met me, right? Mm-hmm. Because a CPA, it tends to be a very trusted financial advisor, and as a tax person yourself also. So they trust us, and without us having to prove ourselves a lot. So I don't get a lot of pushback, especially when I make it clear, look, I'm here to save you money. If that's not of interest to you, then why are we talking? I don't get a lot of pushback. Sometimes you meet somebody who's a character, but that's a personal issue in their head. But yeah, so
absolutely. So how do you tell people, like, how can they're planning for tax season? Because now, like, people think about taxes during tax season. Now, very few people think about taxes. So how can someone, like, shift their mindsets to be, okay, let me now think about taxes, plan for taxes? How can that help them, like, really save, stay out of surprises during tax season, like, and have that huge tax bill? Because some people really have, like, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands in a tax bill.
Oh, yeah. So it's another good question, because it's such an unpleasant thing to mm-hmm. file a tax. It's really quite unpleasant. Personally, I wait till October 15th to file my tax returns. I hate doing my tax returns, right? But I have an idea where I'm headed, right? So what we encourage people to do is, you know, it doesn't have to be a daily thing, but if you have a business, it should be a monthly thing. You run your numbers, you get an idea of what your profit is or loss, and that will help you, along with your tax advisor, will help you decide, you know, do I need to sock money away because for taxes, because I had a profitable month? So if I made $100,000 in profit in January, I need to be putting around away, you know, maybe $30,000, $40,000 into a bank account for taxes and see how the rest of the year goes. But just a monthly or quarterly attention to that detail will work wonders. But the person who waits to the end of the year to come and then start dealing with their taxes, they're going to be in for a terrible, terrible surprise. And a lot of times they don't have the money, right? Because they spent it.
Yeah. You know,
they went on vacation, they spent the money. So
absolutely.
We just try to work with people who are going to be serious about their tax bill and what to do about it. You don't have to do a tax return every month, but a roundabout number, 30, 35%, hey, sock that away and let's see how the year goes. And then talk to me every quarter. Let's chat, you know, and pick my brain and let's see what happens and let's see how we can get the year under control. But the planning side, even if it's small planning, it's a lot better than doing nothing until the end of the year, and then all of a sudden you got a disaster on your hands.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you for that. So can we give the audience some tips on what are the most common deduction people forget about it? Like a lot of business owners forget to claim.
Sure. I got a list in my head that I can go on. I can talk your ear off, you know, but so a home office deduction. A lot of people won't do the home office deduction because maybe they think it's complicated,
mm-hmm.
or they think it's a red flag. There was a day when people said, oh, no, they'll do home office deduction because it's a red flag, you know, and there were a lot of accountants that would say, yeah, it's a red flag. Let's not do it. But my position is, if it's in the law, it's legal.
Yeah, absolutely.
if the speed limit is 70 miles an hour, why are you driving 50 miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you don't like to drive fast, you do the speed limit. It's legal. So the home office deduction is one, you know, you just have to know the rules. So that's one right there. Another one is the startup cost. You know, what did it take for you to get your business started up, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, they just start counting the dollars and including the dollars that they spent once they opened their doors, let's say. But there's some tax deductions that you can take from, you know, getting that business off the ground, right? So startup costs, you can deduct, you know, a few thousand dollars right off the top. And then over the next few years, you can, if there's more than $5,000, you can take a piece of it every year into the future. Another one is mileage. And this is a confusing one for a lot of people. The mileage rate can be 65 cents a mile. You know, so if you're driving for your business and you do 10,000 miles, you got a $6,500 tax deduction.
Yeah.
That can be pretty big. So a lot of people don't do it right. And then they estimate at the end of the year, we may ask, well, what's your mileage? And they estimate, oh, I did 10,000 miles. Like, yeah, but do you have a mileage log? You know, and if you don't have a mileage log, then the IRS, if you get audited, they can deny the deduction, right? So we encourage people to keep a mileage log. You can get a smartphone app. It knows when you're driving. And it picks up the point A to point B, and you don't have to do anything except swipe left for personal and swipe right for business. And now you got a mileage log. So that's a good one. One of my favorites is education and training. If you are in a business that requires constant training or whatever, coordinate your training in a conference in California or Florida, let's say, or Puerto Rico, and take a and combine it with a vacation. So if you go on vacation, you know, and take vacation days, you can take part of your airfare and hotel fare fees, you can take as a tax deduction because you're there for business. So there's rules for that, right? A SEP IRA, you know, pre-tax tax deduction for retirement for the business owner. A business owner can take up to like $65,000, $68,000 and put it into a SEP IRA instead of a $25,000 traditional
absolutely
IRA,
like
right?
yeah
right? so
Absolutely. There's a
That's a
lot of
big one.
questions. And thank you. You actually covered a lot of them right here. Hopefully, people like you have to re-listen to this episode. Like, you can go on any podcast, like, you're gonna find the recording, or on YouTube, like, or on demand. You can watch it again because this is a lot of value here. It can save you tons of money. And I advise you to go connect with Joe for any advice that he's working with people nationwide. Thank you so much, Joe, for the information. I'm really
Pleasure.
glad to have you today with us at Echoes of Impact. Guys, I'll see you after the break with another great guest. This is Echoes of Impact with Noura. I'll be right back. Welcome back. This is your host, Noura Masri, and this is Echoes of Impact with Noura. I hope you got ton of values from my friend Joe. He provided a lot of tax deductions, a lot of information if you want to start your business, shared his experience. And now we have another great guest. She's gonna tell you more about like building a team. Did you hear Joe how he said he started building his team from day one because he wanted to make sure he has a team. So if he got sick, anything, the company is still going. So to talk more about that, I have a great guest with me. Kim, thank you so much for joining me today at Echoes of Impact. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Nora. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. Thank you. Thank you. So could you please introduce yourself to the audience, tell them who you are, what do you do? Just really quick so they can have an idea.
Sure. Well, my name is Kim Diamond Balogh, and my company is K Diamond Consulting, and I assist organizations with talent acquisition. Consulting them on, ways to attract proper talent, branding, how to be, strong leaders and what people look for, as well as other areas within talent acquisition. I can be of help, vendor management, training, interview coaching. I do that as well. So that's what I offer organizations, and I enjoy it thoroughly. It's a lot. It's very rewarding to be able to connect people with great opportunities and have organizations, be successful with their new teams.
That's awesome. So, do you work more on the talent side or on the business owner side?
Well, I work for the business owners and I find them the talent, but I also network with talent. So, there's often people that come to me that are looking for positions, but even though I don't have a position for them at the time, but then I work for a company who's engaged me for a specific position. So both sides.
That's awesome. So, like being a business owner, like the most One of the most challenging thing is finding the right person. Like for me, for example, like I've been like trying to hire an admin assistant, which it seems easy, but it's not. It's one of the hardest position to hire for. So how do you find the help business owner find the right person that's gonna be the right fit and stay with them and grow with the business, not just gonna be trained and then leave when they have the good, they're trained and now they're doing their great job and now they find another opportunity. So how do you help businesses find those people?
Well, first you have to understand the business. So you need to understand the leaders, the business, the culture, their core values, so that when you are looking for the talent that they're looking for, you understand the why, how they operate. That way you can identify a candidate who aligns not only with skills, but culturally. That way there's often better opportunity for you to retain that candidate, to support them in their growth. Ultimately, it's a positive environment. It's very impactful to the business when they're in alignment. So that's probably the first thing that I do is to really get to know the leaders, the business, and their core values, and kind of outside of the skill set, more like the people set included, right? So
Yeah, that's really important. Do you have like kind of tests you take them through, or do you just like from interviewing people, you'll be able to identify these stuff?
Interviewing them, you can build questions around the core values of the organization and the requirements that they are looking for once you have that conversation. So you can build specific questions that will help you uncover that fit, not only from the skills perspective, but also from the cultural perspective. So it's going to be different for each company because they're going to have a different idea. So that's where you have to engage with them and receive that information from them to build those questions.
Absolutely. So how long does it take you, for example, like if I'm coming to you today, say, hey, I want this set of I want this person, how long does it take you from start to recruiting? I know it can vary, but like an average time, like so the business owners can expect, like what would they expect, like if they come to work with you?
The goal is, well, obviously we need to understand their timeline. Some individuals they need as soon as possible because they actually have an outstanding gap in their space there. Or at other times they're looking for future, right? Because they're going to either have this opportunity open or maybe someone's transitioning away from the organization, retiring or what have you. So that timeline can adjust, but ultimately once you're engaged and moving forward, most of the time we try to do something within 60 days. Now, if it's a higher level position, more responsibility, that can take a little bit longer. Like I said, it varies on the level and the scope of the work. And then that also dictates the pool of candidates. So your timeline can fluctuate. But as a rule of thumb, in recruiting, we shoot for 45 days as a consistency. But again, that will fluctuate. Sometimes you will find people right away, 2 weeks, and sometimes it will take 2 or 3 months, sometimes even longer, depending on the role.
Absolutely. So is it easier to find like one entry level roles, mid roles, or is it like with executive roles? Like what's from your experience, which one takes
Well,
the
you had a good example, Nora. An administrative assistant is, it depending on the complexity of the role, I'm not saying it's not, but versus finding like, let's just say, an operations manager. You would be surprised how sometimes those particular roles will be harder to find than the operations manager. And I've struggled with trying to understand that. But it seems that there's something about, but what, but it seems like there's something about finding that group of individuals in that space, like you want an administrator, right? Office administrator, and versus the operations individuals who have a bit of more, can be more of a variety. So an operations person could be an operations person in manufacturing, in industrial, in retail, in health. Where an administrative assistant is pretty going to be so specific to your needs that sometimes creates that smaller pool of candidates because you have a real specific need generally in these roles, and it's going to be a fit, most definitely a fit situation.
Yeah.
So those smaller, I don't call them smaller, that's a bad term. They're not, they're very important roles, but they seem to be more difficult to find the right fit than someone who is, in an operations role. And I really had to, I can't figure it out for myself, but
Yeah.
know it happens. I just know it happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So now we hired that person and we have a team. So how can we make sure to keep that team? Because one thing is just to recruit that team member, and another thing that's gonna be a lot harder sometimes to retain those talents and make sure they're happy and they want to work with you for a long term.
Well, I mean, there's simple ways, and it's simple as, just showing appreciation every day, being thankful for the work that they do, create a positive work environment for them, respectful and inclusive, flexible work hours. A lot of people sometimes need that, so they might need to pick up children after school, or they might have something they have to do in the morning, or maybe they need to work remotely part of the time or all of the time. Opportunities for growth, encouraging them to develop their skills, giving them learning opportunities. People will eat that up if you offer that to them. Open communication, listen to their ideas, collaborate with them. celebrate achievements. You do it on social media. People really like to be featured, right? Also looking at fair compensation and benefits, that's always very important to people. And just overall, you know, a work-life balance. You know, if they feel that you care about their work-life balance, that really goes a long way. I hear that a lot when I'm interviewing candidates. You know, what are you looking for? And a candidate will say, I'm looking for work-life balance, you know, and all these simple things really come into play when you ask them what they're looking for in a new opportunity. So, you know, it builds loyalty, good morale, a positive work environment. All those things will help you keep your people, retain them if you, you know, you show them this compassion and the importance of how they contribute to your team.
Absolutely. So when it comes to work-life balance, I hear it from a lot of people, like, but do you see a difference between, like, based on if they are, based on age? Like, does it come from millennial more or Gen Z, or like, how do you see a difference, or is it the same all across?
I think it's the same all across now. I would say maybe in my earlier recruiting years, I think that wasn't as important. You know, work kind of really was the dominant factor. But I think since people have had opportunities to work from home and do various things and see that they can have more of a work-life balance, that it's become important to spend time with their family because they've been able to over these, you know, over the years, especially with the whole COVID situation and us having to work from home so much. So it's become, I would say it's across the board. I wouldn't say it's generationally specific.
Awesome. So can you share a story where you helped a company build a strong team that made a big difference in the business?
Sure. So when I came into an organization, it was about 2011, they did not have a recruiting team and they had received a service agreement with a client of theirs. It was very aggressive work that they were promising to complete and do for them. It was in the mortgage industry. So they hired me to come on board and to build them a recruiting team. And I did, and it was wonderful. I built a team of individuals with varied skill levels, various experiences directly related to recruiting. And our goal was to hire 400 people in 1 month.
Wow.
And then to continue to hire 100 people a month for a year. So doing this obviously required us to work very cohesively and very supportively. This was a demanding target. We had to work long hours and weekends, hosting job fairs to connect with as many candidates as we could while we were still doing our weekly connections. And throughout that process, I made it a priority to be supportive and work with them hands-on, alongside them, encouraging them, maintaining a positive attitude. Always clear communication of our progress. That was essential to the team. I believe that, you know, in doing so, I demonstrated, you know, kindness and teamwork and transparency. And we as a team fostered a sense of unity. Like it was crucial to our success. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we were able to, you know, meet the service level agreement. We hired 400 people in 1 month and we awesome. Continued to hire 100 people for a year. So the organization was very happy with us on that. So it worked out very well, but it took a lot of teamwork, working together. You know, you are a leader, but you're also one of their colleagues and teammates as well.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing this. We'll be right back with you again, like to talk more about leading and hiring. So, but guys, stay with us for now. Like, let's take a break. This is Echoes FM Backed with Noura. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is your host, Noura Al-Masri, and this is Echoes of Impact with Noura. First, I want to thank you for being here with us again. Until now, like, this is our last segment, and we're going to talk more about hiring and leading. Like, if you are thinking to hire people, you have to be a great leader. And this is what we're going to talk to Kim about it. Like, Tim, we'll come back. Thank you for staying with me until the last segment today. Let's talk about leading, because, you know, people, there's a saying, people don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. So how can you be really a great leader that who leads with heart rather than just having a manual that's going to go off like a machine?
Well, yes. So that, you know, and that's sometimes hard. You know, leaders have to, you know, kind of shift gears sometimes because there's a lot of stresses that come with their jobs, right? So leaders who lead with heart, I think they demonstrate empathy and compassion for people. Showing that you care is really important. You know, supporting your teams, fostering trust and positive relationships. You know, leaders inspire loyalty and motivation by showing that they authentically care and committing to the well-being of their employees. A supportive and collaborative environment encourages growth and excellence. I can't say that enough. That communication and having that transparency and that ability to come to their leader with questions, concerns, or otherwise, you know, is very important. And I think sometimes the leaders can tend to not be able to give that time. And when they don't, then, you know, that's kind of when you can get some fracturing going on. So giving that time and that empathy and that compassion is very important, as well as giving them direction and leadership, that sort of thing.
You mentioned that, like, communication and then giving the time. When you are, you know, busy with tons of other things. So I have this team members to help me not to take out of my time. This is a lot of complaints, like from a lot, I hear it from a lot of business owners. So how do you help business owners navigate that? Like, I guess like this kind of like mindset shift, because like, oh, you're taking from my time now.
Yes. And that's difficult. I understand that, because sometimes they're under some time constraints for certain things that need to get done, priorities that need to be attended to. But if they are sensing that an employee or a person is struggling, or, you know, feels like they're pulling back, or they're not getting the, you know, the level of response or work from that individual they really should take a minute and reflect and ask questions. And ask if there's something happening, you know, what's changed with their, you know, the way that they're working, the output of their work, their engagement. And just doing so, it really can help the employee feel more comfortable, open up, and then take some of the attention off of the leader who is not understanding maybe potentially why the individual isn't performing at that level, or is, you know, their demeanor has changed. Something, you know, with just dismissing it and getting frustrated by it isn't going to help either party. And even though you are busy, it really can be very beneficial to have that open conversation.
Absolutely. So sometimes like people might have to lead and become a leader, even if they don't have that title, like a leader or a director or a manager. So how can someone, you know, like know that they have to lead now and become a better leader, even if they don't hold that title?
Well, I first lead by example. I always encourage that with managers. Lead by example. You know, if you demonstrate integrity and responsibility, if that's what you're looking for, you know, obviously you should be. Communicate, like we talked before, open communication, that these are simple things, builds trust and respect. Show initiative, take responsibility, helping with them solve problems. Take time to build relationships, that's another one. I really encourage that. Building strong relationships with your team, your colleagues. It's not just because you're a leader, it's just because they are your colleagues, you're working with them. You know, stay positive and resilient. Leaders influence by example. So even if you are not titled as a leader, as you mentioned, you are still showing leadership qualities by engaging with them in such a fashion that, you know, it really shows them that you are a problem solver, a respectful collaborator, even though you may not be their actual leader.
So can you tell us a little bit, like, how can the leader make that boundary, like, between communication and being available for the team versus you have that boundary, so don't have, like, okay, if you set a deadline, people will respect that deadline. Don't feel like, oh, okay, they have, you are so kind and you are not going to be able, you're not, you know, they're not going to respect you as much when you don't have boundaries.
Absolutely. You need to have those boundaries as well, but they can't, I don't think you could just set boundaries and then not have that open communication and some empathy and compassion. But, being positive, respectful, helping them understand that there's work to be done and we need to focus on that. But at the same time, there it is a fine balance, and it's not always easy to accomplish because of depending on the stress factors. But if the person knows that, hey, I know you're stressed and I know, but I really need to speak with you about this, because it could be very beneficial and or effective affecting what they're trying to accomplish, right? So pushing them off and just, ignoring them is not going to create that trust and respect that you would want as a leader from your team and vice versa. Okay, so it can be a struggle, and I have seen leaders struggle with that. These, I just want them to do their work. I understand that, but people are people, and they have feelings and they have issues, and things come up, and it just, for me, it seems like it would just be creating more frustration to ignore it than to address it and have the conversation, even though you're busy.
Yeah,
So.
absolutely. So, can you tell us about an example where really leading with kindness and like being there for your team, they made a big impact in the company?
Well, referring back to what that example I gave you, that was, one of those examples where I was working alongside my team. We had a major milestone to achieve. We had a lot of pressure on us all the time. And, being negative would never work in that environment, or not work well, let's put it that way. It just would have not made things move smoothly. So being positive and respectful and understanding them and kind, and they had their own collective goals. We had the team goal. They had some challenges and some concerns. I, made sure to listen to those and not just, keep moving forward. This is the goal. Just keep going on. I'm sorry you have a challenge. No, it wasn't like, we talked about that, and being respectful of their situation. It could have been something happening at home or something, they're dealing with there at work. I think that helped tremendously for us to be able to succeed in what we did together as a team. Even though we were under a lot of pressure to do so, I still wanted to be thoughtful and understand that they had their own personal challenges and things that they were attending to as well, even when I was asking them to work weekends.
Awesome. Awesome. So how can people reach out to you to work with you, and when they should talk to you?
Well, they can reach me at kdiamondconsulting.com. My email is kim@kdiamondconsulting.com. And they can reach out to me anytime with, particular questions around, talent acquisition or, vendor management, interview coaching, training, things of that nature. I'm here. Please send me a message, drop me a line, and I'll be happy to get back to you, and we can talk through, what you're needing some help with.
That's awesome. And do you help people nationwide, or is there a specific area that you can only help them with?
I work nationwide. I've always worked nationwide. So I recruit all over the country and can work with clients all over the country. Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kim. Like,
Thank
it's
you.
been a pleasure having you here. And
Thanks.
you're working in a very, very important area that every business owner should make it a priority. So, and it's very hard to recruit on your own. It's time consuming. It's very expensive to have the wrong person over and over. So, like, people, if you need help recruiting, like, connect with Kim. And we have come to the end of the episode. So we are at the end, and I enjoyed talking to my guests today, and hopefully you got a lot of value and you enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for watching until now. I really appreciate you. If you would like us to talk about a specific thing, if you would like to become a guest at Echoes of Impact, feel free to reach out at hello@echoesofimpact.net, hello@echoesofimpact.net. This was your host, Noura Masri, and this is Echoes of Impact with Noura. Until next time, keep making an impact.